A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us a prompt that lands right at this strange intersection of defense policy, open source software culture, and what I can only describe as a very public middle finger. Ukraine's Ministry of Defense launched a platform called Trophy Lab in May, and it publishes the full engineering data of captured Russian military equipment on the public internet. Not a leak, not a hack. Official government policy. Three-dimensional scans? Material compositions, circuit schematics, the works. The prompt asks three things. What the idea actually is, whether there's historical precedent for a nation doing this, and how initiatives like this use open source and crowdsourcing in a genuinely novel way to distribute intelligence outside government channels.
That third point is the one that really does it for me, because we've seen open source intelligence communities operate at the edges of conflict before. Bellingcat, the OSIT Twitter accounts that track troop movements through TikTok videos. But this is a sovereign government deciding that the most effective way to analyze enemy hardware is to just hand it to the internet. 200,000 downloads from 47 countries as of early June. That's not a briefing, that's a launch.
It's the difference between whispering in a sieve and standing on a rooftop with a megaphone. And the megaphone is pointed at every engineering department, every hobbyist workshop, every Discord server on the planet. To understand why this matters, we need to look at what's actually in the data, and whether anyone has tried this before.
Let's start with what Trophy Lab actually is, because the name sounds like a hunting show. It's a web platform, trophylab.ua.ua, run by Ukraine's Ministry of Defense. And the pipeline works like this. When Ukrainian forces capture Russian equipment in the field, anything from a T-72B3 tank to an Orlan 10 reconnaissance drone, it gets transported to undisclosed facilities in western Ukraine. Then teams from the Kiev Polytechnic Institute and Ukroboronprom, which is the state defense conglomerate, run what essentially amounts to a full forensic teardown, not just photographs. We're talking CT scanning, which gives you internal geometry layer by layer. Imagine a medical CAT scan, but for a cruise missile guidance unit, where you can see the exact routing of wiring harnesses through bulkheads without ever turning a screw. X-ray fluorescent spectrometry to determine exact alloy compositions. You point this handheld device at a piece of metal, and it tells you the elemental breakdown, so you know whether that turbine blade is a nickel superalloy or something more pedestrian. Full disassembly and electronic component inventory, tracing every microcontroller, every capacitor, back to its manufacturer.
They're not just going, here's a picture of a Russian tank. They're doing the equivalent of a college board exam on every piece of hardware, and posting the answer key. It's like they've set up a forensic pathology lab for machines, and the autopsy reports are public domain.
And here's where the access model gets interesting, because it's unusual for anything in the defense world. No registration required to browse the data. No non-disclosure agreements. No export controls, or at least, no export controls that they're enforcing at the point of download. Anyone with an internet connection can download the full datasets, including STEP files. That's a standard CAD format. STEP stands for standard for the exchange of product data, that are essentially ready to feed into a CNC machine or a 3D printer. You could literally download the dimensional data for a Russian drone airframe component and have a machine shop in Milwaukee or Manchester cutting metal by the end of the week.
It's like they've taken the entire concept of classified intelligence and turned it inside out. Instead of need to know, it's want to know. Here you go. Like adopting a feral cat. You don't control where it goes or what it does. You just open the door and trust that its instincts align with yours.
The cat in this case might be the R330G Zhitel electronic warfare module. That's a Russian jammer system designed to disrupt GPS and communication signals across a wide frequency range, and the Trophy Lab dataset includes reverse-engineered circuit schematics for it. You can look at how the signal processing chain works, what frequencies it targets, where the vulnerabilities are in its power regulation. You can see that the power supply filtering has a specific weakness. If you introduce noise at a particular frequency, the whole system destabilizes. It's the kind of thing that, in a previous era, would sit in a classified binder in a SIF for a decade, accessible to maybe 40 people with the right clearances.
Instead, it's sitting on a website where I can theoretically browse it while waiting for my leaf tea to steep. Which raises the obvious first question. What is this platform really about? Is it intelligence sharing with allies? Industrial sabotage of Russian defense manufacturing. A recruitment tool for the global engineering community. Because I can read it several ways, and I think each reading reveals a different strategic layer.
I think it's all of those simultaneously, but the primary function shifts depending on who's looking at it. If you're a NATO defense ministry, Trophy Lab gives you detailed technical intelligence on Russian equipment without having to go through the traditional intelligence, sharing frameworks that are slow and have weirdly rigid classification rules. You know, the kind where a document gets stamped no foreign, and suddenly your closest allies can't see it even though you're facing the same threat. If you're a defense manufacturer in, say, Poland or Finland, it means you can design countermeasures against verified Russian hardware without having to physically acquire a sample yourself. The Ukrainians have already done the capture, transport, authentication, and analysis for you. They've done the expensive, dangerous part.
If you're a hobbyist with a 3D printer and an above-average grievance against the Russian Federation,
you can download the STL files for replacement drone parts and start printing. This isn't hypothetical. There is a real use case emerging right now. In May, when the platform launched, a group of volunteers set up an unofficial Trophy Lab Discord server. It now has 12,000 members. They're collaboratively identifying components, cross-referencing part numbers with civilian electronics catalogs, and proposing countermeasures. Someone will post a photo of a circuit board from the teardown and say, "This voltage regulator is the same one used in the Raspberry Pi power supply." Someone else will trace the signal path and identify where the filtering is inadequate. It's a self-organizing intelligence analysis unit with no government oversight, no budget, no formal structure.
Of course there are. Of course there's a Discord server. The internet's response to a government publishing weapon schematics is to form a chat room and get to work.
There's something almost Wikipedia-like about it, and I think that's intentional on Ukraine's part, or at least a happy byproduct that they've been smart enough to recognize and encourage. One person in the Discord notices that a specific capacitor in a Russian drone flight controller matches one sold on AliExpress for 47 cents. Another person identifies that the GPS module is a uBlox Ineo M8 series chip from a Swiss company, the same chip you'd find in a high-end hiking GPS unit. A third contributor cross-references that with known jamming waveforms and says, "Ah, but the Ineo M8 has a documented vulnerability to spoofing in this specific frequency band." Suddenly, you've crowdsourced an electronic warfare kill switch, and the whole chain took about 6 hours from data release to actionable intelligence.
The analysis pipeline goes from battlefield capture to Ukrainian lab to public website to Discord server to field deployable countermeasure, and the only government employees in that chain are the ones doing the initial teardown. Everything after that is emergent.
That's the part that should make traditional intelligence agencies deeply uncomfortable while simultaneously making them deeply envious. They spend years building analytical capabilities that this model generates in an afternoon through sheer network effects.
To the prompt's second question, the historical precedent, my instinct was that this smells like the 1940s reverse engineering race, but on fast forward and crank to public. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but the contrast makes the point. After World War II, the Soviet Union reverse engineered the American B-29 Superfortress bomber into the Tupolev Tu-4. They had four B-29s that made emergency landings in Soviet territory during the war. Strictly speaking, interned under neutrality law, and the crews eventually returned, but the plane stayed. Stalin ordered Tupolev to reverse engineer every single part, right down to the thickness of the aluminum skin, which they had to match in metric because the Soviets didn't use imperial measurements. They had to convert every rivet, every spar, every wiring bundle from inches to millimeters, and they did it with slide rules and drafting tables. But that entire process was state-to-state, completely classified, and it took years just to produce the first flyable 2-4. Trophy Lab does the equivalent analysis and makes it public within weeks.
The audience is totally different. The 2-4 project was literally a handful of Soviet engineers working in a closed bureau, reporting to a chain of command that ended with Stalin's desk. Trophy Lab publishes to an addressable audience of, what, 4 billion people with an internet connection. Every one of them a potential analyst.
Exactly 4-point-something billion potential analysts. The other historical analog people reach for, and I want to push back on it because it's too cozy a fit, is the U.S. Army's Hack the Pentagon bug bounty program from 2016. That was crowdsourced, yes, they invited vetted hackers to find vulnerabilities in Department of Defense websites. But that was defensive, and the data flow was from the public into the government in exchange for a bounty payment. The government said, here's our system, find the holes, we'll pay you. Trophy Lab flips the direction. The government pushes data out to the public, and the analysis flows back through informal channels. It's not a bug bounty, it's an open source hardware play. It's the difference between hiring a security consultant and publishing the blueprints to your enemy's alarm system.
There's a closer analog that this was built on. Russian tank bingo. Do you remember this?
Oh, that's right. 2022, the Ukrainian IT Army, which is this volunteer cyber warfare group that coordinates mostly on Telegram. They ran this crowdsourced identification project where volunteers would examine satellite imagery and geolocate Russian equipment. The idea was to produce targeting data, yes, but also to build an open catalog of Russian unit types and movements that could be used by anyone. You'd have 1,000 people staring at satellite photos, each one tagging, that's a T-90, that's a BMP-3, those are fuel trucks, and the aggregated data became a real-time order of battle. Trophy Lab is, in a sense, the institutionalization of exactly that ethos. Only now, instead of photos from orbit, you have physical hardware on a lab bench. It's the physical instantiation of what Tank Bingo was attempting to do digitally, moving from we think that pixel is a T-72 to here is the complete bill of materials for a T-72's fire control computer.
We have this gradient, right? Tank Bingo was crowdsourcing observation. What can you see from space? Hack the Pentagon was crowdsourcing vulnerability discovery within a controlled scope. What can you break on our systems? Trophy Lab is crowdsourcing. Here I pause. Full industrial reverse engineering of weapon systems. That's a jump. That's not a step along a gradient. That's a phase change.
It's several jumps stacked on top of each other. And I want to pull on a thread, an actual case study that the Resilience Media piece flagged. This Bulgarian defense blog, not a government publication, not a defense contractor, a blog published a guide earlier this month, June 2026, showing how to use Trophy Lab data to identify Russian electronic warfare systems from their radio emissions alone. You take the RF emission fingerprint data from the Trophy Lab dataset, you run it through a software-defined radio, which is a piece of equipment you can buy for a few $100s. And suddenly, field units can identify a Jatel jammer by its carrier wave without ever seeing the physical hardware. The jammer has a specific signature, a particular pattern of frequency hopping and modulation, and now anyone with the right data can say that signal on the scope is a Jatel, and here's where it's vulnerable. That's the platform functioning as a tactical field manual generated by crowdsourced analysis of government-provided data. None of those three actors, the Bulgarian blogger, the Ukrainian military, and the Discord volunteers, have a formal contract. The coordination is entirely emergent.
Covering the covers. That's just, the systems integration here isn't happening in a conference room in Brussels. It's happening semi-anarchically across Telegram, Discord, and whatever blog is running on a Raspberry Pi in some Bulgarian apartment. The coordination mechanism is someone noticed something useful and posted it, and that's the entire org chart.
This is where I want to pick this apart technically, because the depth of the data here is really something. This is what differentiates this platform from anything we've seen before. It provides verifiable ground truth for the analysis. When the platform publishes an Orlan 10 drone teardown, and you discover it's running a modified Canon EOS 5D Mark IV camera sensor that provides the reconnaissance imagery, that's not speculation. That's not an analyst saying, based on the image quality, we believe they're using a consumer-grade sensor. That's a photograph of the actual sensor with the part number visible, confirmed by spectral analysis of the filter stack. That's a defense-relevant fact that battlefield units now know for certain, and it changes how you think about countering these systems.
They put a consumer DSLR sensor in a military drone. A Canon sensor. The kind of thing you'd use to photograph a wedding.
Not only a consumer DSLR sensor, It's actually a full-frame, 30.4 megapixel sensor of the type you'd find in a professional photography body retailing for about $2,500. And it's modified. They strip out the infrared filter to improve night imaging capability, which is clever but also tells you something about their supply chain constraints. They're not using custom military-grade imaging sensors fabricated in a defense-owned clean room. They're buying commercial camera bodies, disassembling them, modifying the sensors, and integrating them into drones. The core component is something anyone with the budget for a high-end wedding photography camera could acquire. Then they integrated it with a Chinese consumer-grade GPS module and an STM32 microcontroller board, both components that cost a few dollars each and are widely available on the commercial market. The Trophy Lab data makes this component chain globally identifiable to defense engineers, and it tells you something profound about Russian defense manufacturing. They're not operating some inaccessible military industrial fortress. They're shopping at the same electronic supply chain the rest of the world uses.
Which, from Russia's perspective, makes several million rubles worth of defense engineering look like a particularly ambitious Arduino project. It's embarrassing on a technical level, but it's also strategically revealing. It means their supply chain is vulnerable to the same disruptions that affect commercial electronics.
This is the asymmetric value proposition of the platform in a nutshell. Russia already knows what's inside its own equipment. The factories that produce the Orlan 10 and the folks at the Special Technology Center in Saint-Sainter, Petersburg, that manufacture them. They know which Canon sensor they buy from commercial retailers and which ST microelectronics controller they use. The publication of this data gives Russia nothing that their own defense industrial base doesn't already possess. They're not learning anything about their own hardware.
Right, so the "this is reckless, you're helping Russia" criticism
falls apart the second you actually think about it for more than 2 seconds. Russia has the originals to disassemble themselves. They built the things. The value is radically asymmetric. Ukraine and its supporters gain distributed analysis capacity from literally anyone with an internet connection, while Russia gains nothing it doesn't already have. It is the definition of a strategically lopsided intelligence maneuver. You're giving your side a global analytical workforce and giving your adversary exactly zero new information.
Let me push on a specific case. The T-72B3 tank analysis. What came out of that? Give me the numbers, not the vibes.
The T-72B3 is Russia's most common main battle tank currently fielded in Ukraine. And the dataset here is the crown jewel of this first data release. The analysis focused particularly on the relict explosive reactive armor system. Those are the rectangular blocks bolted onto the outside of the tank designed to defeat shaped charge anti-tank warheads. When a shaped charge hits a relic block, the explosive inside detonates outward, disrupting the incoming jet of molten metal before it can penetrate the tank's hull. The study reveals a really precise RDX to wax ratio in those blocks that gives the explosive a specific detonation velocity and pressure profile when hit.
You're saying they basically shared the recipe for the tank's defensive cheese. Here's what's in the sandwich. Here's how it melts.
That's BS. The analysis team mounted relic tiles in a polymer matrix fixture and measured spall patterns, detonation velocity data, initiation sensitivity thresholds, and exactly where on the explosive tile a warhead needs to strike and at what angle to achieve reliable initiation. What they published is the material description plus select test results that allowed engineers to verify, let me get this exactly right, that the armor can be defeated using off-the-shelf industrial explosives configured in a specific geometry without requiring military specification shaped charges. You don't need a purpose-built anti-tank warhead. You can achieve the same effect with commercially available mining explosives if you shape them correctly.
You're publishing a recipe for defeating Russia's primary tank armor using explosives you can source on the industrial market, not military-grade munitions, the kind of thing a quarry uses.
Which existing warhead manufacturers could then adapt into their products without having to capture their own relic samples to test against? That collapses a development and reverse engineering cycle that could be years long in peacetime conditions. Normally, if you want to design a warhead that defeats a specific armor system, you need to acquire samples of that armor, which is difficult and dangerous, and then run dozens or hundreds of test shots to characterize its behavior. Ukraine just handed the world a shortcut.
I assume they're not publishing. I mean, they're not putting out the exact initiator timing tolerance down to the microsecond, such that whatever terrorist group you care about could replicate this from scratch with a trip to a mining supply store. There has to be a line.
This is what I want to address because it's the "what's the security concern here?" question looming over the whole arrangement. If you read what the platform actually publishes, they appear to have made editorial decisions about technical thresholds. They share enough data to verify that a given combination of industrial materials can reliably penetrate or degrade relict blocks. But the Ukrainian teams producing the data are knowingly injecting imprecision in the areas where exact replication could become a concern, so they'll say a specific material ratio is within this specified range, but won't give you the precise tolerance that's actually in Russian military assemblies. They'll tell you the RDX to wax ratio falls between, say, 60-40 and 70-30, but they won't tell you it's exactly 63-37. That imprecision is the safety valve.
Somebody knowledgeable confirm this? This isn't just speculation about their editorial process.
A number of defense analysts who've commented on the data suggest this represents Ukraine redacting the elements of the findings that would be needed for someone with a lathe and bad intentions to independently synthesize the exact Russian components. They publish enough lethality data to tell Allied warhead designers, use commercial explosive grade X material Y and shape chart Z, and it reliably defeats relict, but not more than that. The data is sufficient for a state-level defense contractor with existing manufacturing capabilities to develop a countermeasure. It's not sufficient for a non-state actor to build a weapon from scratch.
They've arrived at something. A selective redaction mechanism. That is basically editorial rather than classification-based. Where a subject matter expert, human writing the report, gets to decide, this paragraph helps produce countermeasures everyone should have access to. The next comma goes into proliferation territory. That's itself just fascinating as an institutional design problem. You've replaced the classification bureaucracy with editorial judgment exercised by individual engineers.
I think there's a layer here where the selection exists and invites exactly the right sort of technical audience. If you're operating a legitimate defense manufacturer's concern in a government-affiliated export-controlled environment, the data provides competitive advantage. You get enough precision to design a warhead. If you're operating a lathe jockey militia with no such export control coverage, the data simply shouts, "Go look at off-the-shelf defeat solutions," without going into the micro detail that militia might need to actually fabricate metal-jacketed explosives from raw chemical precursors purchased across the border. It's a remarkably elegant filtering mechanism.
The platform also explicitly invites partners, that's their word, to request physical access to the actual captured equipment. They literally offer to send you, a foreign engineer, hardware pieces of a Russian missile guidance unit for physical examination and testing of your own. It says you can even test countermeasures explosively if the warhead is not already destroyed. I mean this with genuine professional fascination. That is insane, and it is also utterly brilliant. They're not just publishing data. They're running a hardware lending library for weapons reverse engineering.
An extraordinary form of layered intelligence transfer. First captures, then transfers for forensic CT scanning and teardown to a technically specified data packet and published reports. Third tier, shipments of the physical remains down to forwarding a complete missile tail fin from the transport hub. At each layer, the number of allies receiving protected intel is scaling bandwidth closer to a market channel than an intelligence clearance roster. It's like they've built an Amazon for adversary hardware. Browse the catalog, download the data, and if you need the physical item, we'll ship it to you.
Like asking the public to track enemy vulnerabilities. A fusion of forensic service laboratory that's almost without precedent in war. Asking the metadata crowds themselves to direct analysis. So if somebody submits the improvised repair document from a captured engineer toolkit recovered last week, the crowdsourced Discord self-adds. The system feeds itself.
Here's the next thing I want to throw in as evidence. This is self-aware. It is exactly the institutional design Ukraine wants the world internalizing. These aren't contingencies that just crept into ministry drafting sessions, is my strong sense. This specific design arises at a deliberate political layer inside President Zelensky's Defense Innovation Charrettes, those intensive design workshops they've been running since the early days of the invasion, bringing together military officers, tech entrepreneurs, and academics to rethink how a smaller nation fights a larger one. Trophy Lab isn't an accident. It's a product of deliberate institutional design.
Okay, let's step through where this works in practice. Why does it threaten Russian military effectiveness that the Orlan Reconnaissance Data Link as a fixed code IS-band vulnerable to software-defined radio intercept in a specific frequency range? How does the crowd take these tidbits from the publicly available hard data and actually produce real intelligence product?
The Orlan 10 communicates with its ground station using a data link in the industrial scientific medical band. That's an unlicensed frequency range used by everything from Wi-Fi to microwave ovens. The Trophy Lab analysis revealed that the data link uses a fixed coding scheme rather than frequency hopping or encryption. Once you know the code, you can intercept the video feed in real time. The Discord community took that finding and within days produced a step-by-step guide for configuring a software-defined radio to lock onto the Orlan's downlink frequency and decode the video stream. That means a Ukrainian soldier with a $100 SDR dongle and a laptop can now see exactly what the Russian drone operator sees. The crowd translated a physics-level finding. The data link uses fixed coding at 2.4 GHz into a practically deployable intelligence-gathering tool. Data transitioning from particle reference measurement tables into battle-ready frequency spot jamming racks manufactured with high school laboratory classroom consumables during actual conflict conditions.
The intelligence cycle that normally takes months, capture, transport to a lab, analysis, classification, dissemination through channels, eventual deployment, has been compressed to capture, publish, crowd analyzes, field units deploy countermeasure, all within a week. That's not an incremental improvement. That's a different category of thing entirely.
We've now covered the historical dimension reasonably well. The Cold War precursor that nobody meaningfully mirrors, the way this inverts doctrine away from inward protective classification toward more assertive outward provision design. That's settled solidly enough.
Let me pull us toward a broader characterization before we close. The asymmetric risk summary for the less technical, softer social impact side. What does this mean by region scope? If you're a defense ministry in Southeast Asia watching this, what do you take away?
If you're a defense ministry anywhere watching this, the takeaway is that the cost of technical intelligence on adversary hardware has just dropped to near zero, but only if you're willing to accept the reciprocal risk. Ukraine can do this because Russia already knows what's in Russian equipment. The asymmetry only holds if you're publishing an adversary's hardware, not your own, but the model is now proven. The question becomes, who else has captured hardware they'd be willing to publish?
That brings us to the diffusion question. We're seeing one formal vertical. Government information drops fast through layers, and one horizontal aggregator layer feeding localized counterpart. Material defensive groups worldwide wanting item-specific counteractions, already tailored, already ready, with the original provider's blessing. This is a template.
Let's leave one key rap-style thought before we exit. The civil society dimension. This is where the entire tension of the current genre sits. You have a government deliberately empowering non-state actors to participate in military technical analysis. That blurs every line we've drawn between state and non-state, between professional and amateur, between classified and public, and it's working.
Now, because we have a tradition to maintain, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
An early Renaissance manuscript from what is now Eritrea contains the only surviving depiction of the crier dingi, a type of bowed lyre played vertically that was described as the voice that sits both inside and beside the singer. The manuscript, dated to approximately 1520, shows the instrument being played by a musician seated cross-legged, with the lyre resting on the ground and the bow drawn horizontally across the strings, a technique that produces a harmonic overtone the manuscript describes as the shadow voice, a secondary tone that follows the primary note at a fixed interval. Ethnomusicologists have attempted to reconstruct the instrument based on the manuscript's detailed dimensions, but no physical example has ever been found.
Right. A shadow voice. That's gonna sit with me.
That's fascinating, and also completely orthogonal to everything we've discussed, which I believe is the point.
The question hanging over everything is what comes next. If this model succeeds and downloads, Discord membership, attention from allied defense firms all indicate it is. Do we eventually see an Iranian equivalent? Capture tables plus 3D file posts of whatever American drone remnants they've collected, with rapid digital transfers direct onto GitHub. Replicators will click reproduce straight parallel until this meta becomes doctrine in asymmetric intel production.
I agree, and I predict some player in the world attempts a mirror within 3 years. Iran is the obvious candidate. They've already captured American drone technology and reverse-engineered it through traditional state channels. Making that process public would be a logical next step. Meanwhile, China has recently raised, slightly but measurably, spending on sharing verifiable material gathered from what appear to be captured UAV subassemblies, going through open access routes that GIT platform monitoring tools indicate we're already partially seeing. The direction of travel is clear. Within the near future, open verification of captured hardware. Publishing everything yourself in plain, readable, internet standard formats after verifying through decentralized broad submit programs becomes mainstream across multiple defense establishments.
The logical extension of that, the thing we can see forming on the horizon, is some kind of neutral, decentralized arrangement that logs capture confirmation and technical verification by blockchain. Based DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization, employing token incentive rewards, and automatically, irrevocably launching immutable, documented public blueprints. That would generate exactly the proxy design proliferation we earlier cautioned about, and it may already be closer than we think.
I don't have confirmation on this yet, but I'm watching it. There's momentum forming around something foreseeable in timeliness, with the possibility worth asserting. Definitely somewhere adjacent, building major piece adaptation extensions through similarly replicable channels. The direction marks genuine top level within now accurate horizon. Walking. We're seeing the pre-seeds of their own subsequent growth near here. The likely advance is a formal pivot toward total tactical distributed networks built from scratch, fairly post-near future, generating regular scale high-potential interesting developments.
We are where the novel format leaves us thinking at the outline. Less pure feel without a named paper wrapping this broadcast drop point. So maybe social positive, but wide warning, large follow effect. Best thanks to Holding Creative behind this entire huge thought complication. Same thing, but totally fully ready anytime needing reuse. Planning great thinking, currently deeper in some relevant separated conclusion sets.
I'd encourage listeners to dig into the subject. Open science, collective massive note-checking, and a real engineering showcase worth consideration, producing pull forward for any technical reference elsewhere. Our archives present a consistent set of options.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you found this worth sharing, pass it to someone who still thinks of intelligence as being the same trench coat scenario spy stuff. Maybe suggest they reconsider. Direct them to the reading we've referenced, or pass along anything at our internal channels. Thanks for the effort.
Dig into the subject. Open Science Collective Massive Note Check in a Real Engineering Showcase Worth Consideration. Producing pull forward for any technical reference elsewhere. Our archives present consistent set options.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.